Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number two of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Reacting all morning long to the Titans' big win yesterday against the Bears. Also a tough weekend for the Tennessee Volunteers. A disaster of a weekend for the Tennessee Volunteers. They lose Saturday night 24-13 on the road at Arkansas. That's their fourth loss in a row. They dropped to 2-4. On the season in a game, Joe, where they led 13-0 at halftime. They were playing well defensively. Offensively, I'm not going to say they were playing well, but they were doing enough offensively. And then the wheels fall off in the second half, and they just get boat raced in the third quarter. Arkansas scores three touchdowns in a row, and it was over. You could feel it being over in that game for Tennessee in the second half to begin that third quarter. It was like a wave that Arkansas was riding.
Yeah, I don't understand. The easy thing we can all say is that coaching adjustments, and you can't discount that, but there's something else. That's almost become their third down defense, like third quarter football. For whatever reason, they come out of a locker room and they ball up in a corner and just completely disappear from a game. It's weird. It was ugly, and they should have never been in that situation. You can't blame anybody on the Tennessee side for what happened to Garantano, but then what happened after that was just hard to understand.
It was very hard to understand, and here's what Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt had to say about the loss following the game against Arkansas on Saturday night.
First of all, you got to give credit to Arkansas. They really outplayed us in the second half, outscored us. In fact, shut us out the second half. So not a very good job there. We got to do a much better job coming out at halftime. But if you look at this game, to me, there's lots of things that we've got to do, obviously, to correct. First thing is we got to play a lot cleaner game. All right? And that starts with me, starts with the coaching staff. And we didn't play very good the second half at times.
So that's Jeremy Pruitt after the game. And Joe, I'll be honest, when I heard him talk yesterday, or I guess Saturday night after the game, he probably would have been better off not saying anything whatsoever. Like, I understand it's a post-game press conference, and you're not ever going to hear after a loss what you want to hear as a Tennessee fan. I get that. But this, hey, we got to play a cleaner game stuff, you've been saying that for 4 weeks. Like, where's the cleaner game? Why is it not happening? Like, I thought the coaching, I thought, honestly, was atrocious in that game. They came out in the third quarter. They got shelled. Jim Chaney called an awful game, even in the first half. They were running the ball effectively, but they ran the ball almost literally every first down. Every first down play, they ran the ball. And I think Jarrett Garantano, he played into the third quarter and had 8 passing attempts. And I understand, like, you don't want Jarrett Garantano slinging the ball around the yard all over the place, but you got to at least have some threat of a passing game, and they just didn't have it. I thought overall it was just an awfully, awfully coached game by Tennessee.
By the way,
Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, Garantano was good.
He was.
And he was running around, making plays with his feet. He was fine. Between the offensive line, those running backs, and him making plays when he needed to, they were in position to win this game going away. Again, it's not their fault he got hurt, but I agree that the offensive play calling was bad. The whole decision process with Maurer and then, okay, go to Bailey and all that was bizarre. And it's like they just fell apart. And if you're falling apart when Garantano leaves a game, again, it's like the whole thing, it looks like it's on a house of cards right now.
And you look at the quarterback position. Garantano goes down in the third quarter. He scrambles. He's trying to get a first down and essentially just jumps into the air and heaves himself into harm's way. He lands, and once he lands, I think it was Bumper Pool on Arkansas, that just hit him right in the head. He hit him right in the head after he bounced up. No flag on the play. No targeting. No anything. I thought it was very strange that there was no flag on that play. He was already down and then gets hit in the head after he pops back up. Nothing. Nobody on the Tennessee sideline does anything. They don't say anything. And Garitano wanders off to the bench, and that's it. I mean, Brian Maurer comes in the next series, and honestly, I was watching the game, and I was like, okay, you're up 13-7 in this game. Maybe that was when they were trailing 14-13. And you're like, okay, you're making a quarterback switch now? Obviously, we found out Garitano is hurt, but Maurer comes in the game, and they were afraid to throw the ball with him in the game. And then Bailey comes in after Maurer throws two picks in a situation where the game was already unraveling anyway. Just a disaster of a second half for the Vols there.
Yeah, again, when Maurer came in, I didn't realize. I'm like, what are you doing? But you know,
yeah, I had the same thought.
And I agree, you're right. I mean, the way that they police the game right now, that certainly deserved a 15-yarder. Did we hear anything? I did not. I missed it if he said anything about Ty Chandler. But
Ty Chandler is apparently an ankle injury.
Ankle, yeah.
So he, I think, what do you have? Did he have one carry?
He had one carry early. Yeah. And I guess that was it. But, I mean, you know, 31 for 123 for Eric Gray. And if you – I mean, it was a 200-yard night for him, you know, if things go the way they should go.
Yeah.
I think another thing with this team, and there was a good – you know, Jason Swain used to play for UT, has a radio show in Knoxville. He tweeted at one point, you know, there was somebody made a good play on defense, you know, and he's like no one congratulated him, you know, like there's no – like we talk about juice –
there's no juice.
They have none.
On that team.
Yeah, they have none. And you look at a guy like Henry To'o, who is a terrific player and is a sophomore taking over a leadership role. Like, that's exactly who you want on the field for you. That's just a huge recruit, and he's going to be a pro. But there isn't enough of that. But also, where is it from the coaching staff? That's got to be there, too. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what's happened with these guys, but it's like that second half of Georgia just throttled them into all the bad habits and bad attitudes of the past.
Yeah, and there's a situation in the second half. You're down 11, and it's fourth down. Like, you're in field goal range. And Samaglia had already hit a 50-yarder. I think he hit a 48-yarder as well. And Jeremy Pruitt, being down two scores, a field goal gets you back to an 8-point deficit where you're down one score with a 2-point conversion, and they elect to go for it on fourth down, not kick the field goal, and remain 11 points behind. I was just left scratching my head at that decision. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say about that decision after the game.
Jeremy, can you take us through your decision not to kick the field goal there with about 5 minutes to go, down 11, which could have got you guys to within 8?
We wasn't close enough. Didn't feel like so, you know, we felt like we had a good play there and you know, just didn't get it done.
What do you mean you weren't close enough? The long was a 50. He had a 50-yard field goal that night and a 48, and that was like 43. What do you mean you weren't close enough?
I mean, he said another point, I guess, later, Samaglia has been banged up.
Yeah.
So fine, but again,
he hit a 50-yarder.
Right. If he hit those other ones, and again, it's not just the bad math there. It's that was Harrison Bailey's first pass of the game, correct?
Yes.
I believe it was. So you got a good play there for your freshman who hasn't thrown a pass yet, and you're going to wait to let him throw his first pass on this 4th and 4. That was mind-boggling stupid coaching.
It was stupid coaching, and to sit there in the post-game press conference and say that you weren't close enough is just one of the most ridiculous things I've ever. It was a very Butch Jones-esque saying from Jeremy Pruitt, telling me you're not close enough when your kicker has made a 50-yard field goal and a 48-yard field goal. What that tells me is he had no idea the math in his head that they were down 11. He thought they needed a touchdown, and then I guess we'd go for another touchdown later. But he didn't even think about the fact that they were 11 points ahead. That's what it tells me.
Well, if you're right, it's not just him. There's all those guys with headsets.
Yeah.
I mean, could they all be that bad at math?
Have you watched them play?
Well,
maybe.
I understand, but that would be astounding. But then again, there's no great explanation for it.
It was incredible. Like, I couldn't believe that he said that after the game, that they weren't close enough.
We weren't close enough.
Yeah, we weren't close enough.
We weren't close enough.
We weren't close enough.
That might end up being a Pruitt memory. You know, that might be one of his brick by bricks.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, Jeremy will be fine. Need to give him 4 more years to get a full roster of high recruits.
Is this sarcasm?
I hope that's sarcasm. I really do.
Four more
years.
Year 8. Here we come, baby.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texts in, would have been happy with 4-6 if we just beat the teams we're always supposed to. Now I feel like next year he is fired if they don't go 8-4. Talking about Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah.
They're in a bad situation right now. We talked about every game left on their schedule we thought being winnable. Maybe not that they were going to win, but at least being winnable. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't think Texas A&M is winnable. I certainly don't think Florida is winnable after watching that game against Georgia on Saturday. Vanderbilt is, and depending on which Auburn team shows up, I guess it could be. But I think you are very much, if you're Tennessee right now, staring 3-7 right in the face.
Do you think, I don't know how much you watched of the Vanderbilt game, but do you think there's any chance Vanderbilt could get Tennessee this year?
I mean, my heart tells me no. My brain tells me, yeah. Yeah, there's a chance.
What will your reaction be on that Monday? If Vanderbilt
probably be out of work.
Beats Tennessee.
On that Monday. Probably won't go very well. Ugh. Vanderbilt right now is atrocious. And Mississippi State, I mean, I guess they almost found a way to screw it up. If Tennessee screws up the game against Vanderbilt and they end up 2-8, you got to fire him.
You got to fire him now. No question asked.
Fire him.
Okay.
Look, a lot of Tennessee fans are there right now.
Oh, I know.
We're going to talk about that a little bit in the next segment. But if you lose out and go 2-8, I don't know, man.
478-204, Vanderbilt outgained Mississippi State. Dominated them.
Just turned the ball over.
Yeah. Had a couple plays, and they might win that game going. I mean, Mississippi State, let's give them credit for being atrocious.
But yes, they are not good.
Just saying. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Do you think Vanderbilt could get Tennessee?
I mean, I think that Tennessee should win that game by double figures. But I'm losing understanding of what is happening with this program.
Have we overrated the talent? It seems like this happens every year.
Yeah.
Like, we just, hey, Tennessee's right on the brink. They're right on the brink of being right back there in the East. And then they go out and they just get drubbed by Georgia. They get killed by Alabama. And they just got worked by Arkansas in the second half. Like, are we overrating where this group is talent-wise? Or is this just this bad of coaching?
Well,
for Jeremy Pruitt.
Look, those guys up front, you're going to play in the NFL. Eric Gray is going to play in the NFL. I think Jalin Hyatt is a stud who is going to be a great, you know, defensively, toe-to-toe. He's a great player. They've got some other guys. I think defensively they definitely are average with talent overall. And some guys who are young who may end up being really good. And this is where, if you're going to be a Pruitt sunshine blower, I'd like to hear from anyone who is today. You can say, hey, this guy Elijah Simmons comes on, and Morvin Joseph, and Tyler Barron, and you know this is going to be better in the future. So I think there is some level of overrating them when we talk about that. We talk about the SEC East and stuff. But, again, we saw them for one half at Georgia. Like, here they are. This is it. And it just all fell apart. I think it's more coaching than it is overrated talent.
So when we come back, what have the last 4 games told us about Jeremy Pruitt and this Tennessee program? Should the Vols move on from Jeremy Pruitt? We'll discuss that, get your reaction on the other side of the break. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Things are turning around quick in Fayetteville. Bailey, end zone, jump ball. It is intercepted again. Razorbacks with another pick to seal it.
Losses in a row. And do you have a sense for kind of where your team is at mentally right now? Do you have a read on that?
You know, I just talked to them. I told them, I said, I'm not discouraged. I'm not disappointed with where we're at. I'm pissed off where we're at, obviously. But, you know, it's – it's like I told the players, you know, I've been a part of really good programs. I know how to get there. And we have to learn to play at a higher level on Saturdays.
That was Jeremy Pruitt after the game on Saturday, a 24-13 loss for the Vols at Arkansas. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning. I'm not discouraged. I'm not disappointed. I'm pissed off. Joe, can you tell me what that means? I don't know what that means.
I don't know. He's not unhappy about it, but he's just really unhappy about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was really bad. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Drew text in, as a Bama fan, I love this conversation that comes up every 4 years like a presidential election. Who's going to be the next Vols coach? Maybe there should be a Tennessee head coach election. This does seem to be a theme the last few years.
Maybe you and I should debate.
Maybe so.
To be president of Tennessee football.
I don't know if we want that job.
Well, see, Vols fans, I mean, Pruitt was, we're talking buyout for Pruitt last year, year two. So people don't, right now, Pruitt getting through four at this point sounds like a,
well,
you know.
This is why we said, and I think you and I both said this, when it happened at the time. Why are you giving this dude a contract extension? He hasn't done anything. You decide before the season starts this year, in his third year, to give him a contract extension when he's got a six-game winning streak to close out last year against teams that are not in the top 25. And then you come into this year, and I guess because of you want stability, quote-unquote, in your program to show to recruits that you're giving this guy a contract extension. How's that contract extension looking right now? Not very good.
Yeah, you save those for achievement reward, which, you know, they were in the middle of a winning streak, but save it for postseason achievement reward / deterrent from others who would want to hire your coach. Now, of course, with Pruitt, he's not going anywhere but a handful of places from here. Right? This is close to the peak of head football coaching jobs in college football that you can have. But still, like, you save it for, you just did this, here's your reward.
Yeah. So let's throw it out there. Like, a lot of Vols fans have jumped ship on Jeremy Pruitt after the last 4 weeks. And it's amazing how quickly things can turn around. They win the first two games of the season. They've got an 8-game winning streak total. And now 4 games losing in a row. A lot of Vols fans are out on Jeremy Pruitt, especially given to who they lost to on Saturday and the state of that coaching staff with Sam Pittman coming in year one and putting them in a better position right now than the Vols are in. Do you blame Tennessee fans for wanting to move on right now from Jeremy Pruitt and making the judgment that this is not going to be the guy that brings Tennessee football back to where they need it to be? Is that too soon in your opinion, or do you think there's some validity to that given what we've seen in the last 4 games?
So do I think it's too soon for Vols fans to feel that way? I understand them feeling that way, but do Vols fans realistically think Jeremy Pruitt might be fired after this year? I mean, maybe in the scenario you just presented, the 2-8 and you lose to Vanderbilt and it's just misery and negativity, maybe. But really what matters here is, what does Philip Fulmer think? He's the one who hired him, so he's the AD who was brought in to save the day with all the mess with John Curry, and this is his guy. And if you're an AD and you made a hire of a coach, it's way harder and way less likely to fire that coach before he gets the generally agreed upon amount of time to turn a program around. So what does Philip Fulmer think right now? I'm sure he's not happy. But is he realistically thinking, we might just have to just start over here?
This is also not a very good reflection on him either, especially the contract extension part of it. That's the part to me that just makes no sense. And we said at the time, why are you giving this guy a contract extension? That right now, from Philip Fulmer's vantage point, is looking very bad. Very bad.
Yeah. Now, Fulmer was put in a tough position in that search. They'd already gone through all these different candidates. Trying to remember who was, obviously we know Mike Leach was like all in on coming. Of course, now Vols fans are like, whew, okay.
Yeah.
But again, year one for him too. I mean, he'll get players in there and we'll see if they can be more competitive. I still think Mike Leach at a place like this where you could get that kind of talent would be interesting, but who knows? But who else was out there? I mean, it was Mel Tucker.
Yeah.
You know, was
who was interested? That's the question.
I think Mel Tucker, certainly. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, if you're Tennessee and you are hiring the hot coordinator, that right there is, that's a reflection of erosion, yep, of the step down, right? Because Tennessee should be able to hire a winning football coach from a good program.
Yeah.
Like someone who's a head coach who has demonstrated. And Jeremy Pruitt's, he, you know, good coordinator at a place that has more talent than anybody else.
Right.
Let's go to our- sorry, but with Fulmer, the decision to hire him, I mean, he was in a bind. Let's remember
that.
Yeah,
he was.
But it's still his guy. And so I think that he's certainly going to be more patient than a lot of Vols fans. Probably most Vols fans are at this point.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Joe from Nashville, who wants to weigh in on Jeremy Pruitt. Joe, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's a good sunny day. Titans won, Titan up. Just wanted to comment about just how disappointing this coaching staff is, because you look at them, our guys, they're wasting timeouts to line our guys up properly. We got defensive tackles who can't play gap football. They don't know how to get off a tackle. And guess what? They can't wrap up. Just simple football technique does not exist with the Tennessee Vols. Sam Pittman, on the other hand, did you see the wide receivers for Arkansas? When they didn't have the ball, they were throwing textbook blocks. They were beautiful. Blocking down the field, getting off tackles, wrapping up. And guess what? He didn't have to take any timeouts to line his guys up.
I think that's a great point by Joe there. Appreciate your call. The timeouts that this team has had to waste all year long of – either not getting a play in right, not getting a guy off the field in time to substitute, or not getting lined up properly. I mean, it hasn't gotten any better. That happened again on Saturday night. And it's like, what are you guys doing in practice? Do y'all not know how to get on the field and get lined up at this point? I mean, it's just really bad.
No. And, and here and there that happens. But when it's a chronic thing, again, that's coaching. And I'm glad Joe brought up defensive line, because remember, that's also where Pruitt's going to have this magical turnaround after firing Jimmy Brumbaugh. I did not see a massive turnaround after 2 weeks of Jeremy Pruitt's coaching on the defensive line.
No, I haven't seen much of a turnaround at all. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyler from Berry Hill text in, Mike Gundy was interested in the job. Don't you wish you could see that sweet mullet on Rocky Top right about now if you're a Tennessee fan?
Oh, he was not. Mike Gundy was interested in getting his salary up a little bit more. He had zero interest in leaving. But I'd be all for that mullet. That would be a lot of fun, but he was not interested.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff texts in, says, I realize Philip Fulmer is held in high esteem in Vol Nation. However, this team is still not very good, with the same excuse-making and overpaid coaches parading through Knoxville one after the other. And now Pruitt is coaching with a fresh new unearned contract extension. Say what you want about it being necessary for recruiting. Maybe Vol Nation should rethink their devotion to Philip Fulmer as well.
Well, I think this goes to, you said this last week, and I'm big on this. There's this, like, we got to get someone with Tennessee ties and, you know, someone who's a Vol for life and all this stuff. Now, at the time, hey, it's great to have Philip Fulmer available to try to help you clean up this mess in that moment. So the whole mess preceding him is not on him, and it's great that you had him available to try to fix that, but that you got to just get the best people, you know, like long term, because I don't know how much longer Philip Fulmer wants to do this. You know, you've got to just find the best possible athletic director and then the best possible head coach, and not worry about any of that other stuff. It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Alabama did not, I mean, give a crap that Nick Saban had no Alabama ties before they went and got, and I'm not saying you just go out and hire Nick Saban, but I think that whole thought of the glory days, links, and all that stuff, it's just, I think it's not relevant.
On Twitter, Rocky Top Buck says it's time for somebody to move on, whether it be him or some assistants, talking about Jeremy Pruitt. W. Scott on Twitter says, Chaney, get him out of here. Give another full year to Pruitt. Jack on Twitter says, give him two more years, but it's not looking good on the development front. And then Matt, who is a Gators fan, says, give Jeremy Pruitt a lifetime contract.
Uh-huh. So, well, I think whoever just said Chaney right there probably hit on something that, if you want to talk about what's realistic moving forward,
yeah,
you know, and it may not be Jim Chaney fired, but maybe, yeah, Jim Chaney's, you know, decided to
step down
and maybe retire or whatever. It's not going well.
It's not going well at all. Whatsoever. When we come back, Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. We'll get into the Vols conversation with him. That's coming up next. But first, Joe, you have a word from FanDuel.
I do. I have a word for FanDuel and for people who are watching football lately, seeing ads and wondering, wait a minute, is betting legal in Tennessee? Well, it is. FanDuel Sportsbook, legal in Tennessee. And you can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free. You can get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. No strings attached. Any bet you want. If you win, you keep the $1,000. If you lose, you get it all back, up to $1,000 in bonus site credit. And you can take another shot at the end zone on the house. You know, for example, we've been talking about the Vols. You know, you might really like Texas A&M in that game. So far, there's not a line yet. But whatever the line is, you might really like Texas A&M in Knoxville this Saturday. Put $1,000 on it. If you're wrong, if the Vols magically rise up with Jeremy Pruitt, Custer's last stand, you can get your money back. And the risk-free bets, just the beginning at FanDuel Sportsbook. They got a simple app. They got live betting on every game. They got game parlays where you can combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. And, of course, you get your winnings as little as 24 hours. You know, it's easy to register. It's easy to deposit. You get the fast withdrawals. But also, you can really load up on one particular game. Live betting right in the middle of a game. You can bet on the second half of a game. I mean, there's a lot of options out there for people who even want to focus in on one game or, of course, bet on a bunch of them. To claim that risk-free bet, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with promo code Joe so they know I sent you. FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Joe, J-O-E. You must be 21 or older, present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable. It expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.
We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a disastrous loss for the Tennessee Volunteers on Saturday to Arkansas, 24-13. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Good morning, guys.
So, Josh, I want to start with the third quarter woes that the Vols have had the last four games. I believe the margin is being outscored 61-7 in the third quarter in the last four games, all of which obviously have been losses for Tennessee. What have you made of why that's been the case in the third quarter, and how much of that falls squarely on coaching?
Well, it's a good question. Why? I'm guessing there are a number of factors, but one would have to be that opposing teams are doing a better job of figuring out what's gone on, what's gone wrong in the first couple of quarters, and taking advantage moving forward. You know, coming out of the Kentucky game, there was so much blame placed on Jerry Garantano, and his pick sixes were what they were, and they were very costly. I don't think anybody would disagree. But I came out of that game asking, wait a minute, Tennessee had scored a touchdown, though, going into the half. So it was actually the lead was cut from 17-0 to 17-7, and Tennessee still came out playing very poorly. So it couldn't all have been about whether just deflated from the two interceptions that were returned for touchdowns, because we had already seen Tennessee respond favorably on offense with a scoring drive. And they came out and just looked terrible in the third quarter. The Georgia game was more explainable because, well, Georgia just – maybe the players just showed up and said, hey, we're better than you were going to show it. Alabama game was what it was. Now you have the Arkansas game where Tennessee went into the half with a 13-0 advantage. And still coming out into the third quarter, it was all Arkansas, and that was the worst third quarter of the season for Tennessee. So there have to be a number of reasons why, but I don't know how you could look at all of these games – and not point to opposing coaching staffs doing a better job of getting their teams ready for the second half of play compared to what Tennessee has done.
So, Josh, what's your show going to be like today?
I would imagine it's going to be uplifting and positive and, you know, forward-thinking, you know, would be my expectation.
Calm.
It will not be any of that. You know, it's going to be a mix of, realistically, it's going to be a mix of fans calling in to, one, complain, two, talk about where the program goes from here, three, the future of Jeremy Pruitt, and four, who replaces him. Because there will be fans that will now start talking about the end, whether it's this year or next year or when it's going to be, that fans are going to expect that a change is inevitable at this point, and what do we do next? Because online, that conversation has already started up. widespread, I think, among Tennessee fans.
Hashtag Hugh to the Hill. I've seen a lot of that.
Oh, God.
A lot of Hugh and a lot of, maybe not a lot, but some Urban Meyer. I'm having to explain to some friends on text threads why it probably will not be Urban Meyer coaching the Vols next year.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Josh, as you said, the fan base, as you know, a lot of them totally jumped ship on Jeremy Pruitt on Saturday night, and it's one thing for the fan base to feel that way. It's quite another for Philip Fulmer and everybody making decisions to feel that way. So how much pressure do you think is on Jeremy Pruitt and the staff for the rest of this season to get things figured out and start to turn this ship around from their vantage point of what Philip Fulmer and the decision makers ultimately think about Jeremy Pruitt and his staff?
There has to be a good amount of pressure, but in terms of jobs being in jeopardy, specifically Jeremy Pruitt's job being in jeopardy, I would still think that's tough for Tennessee to really make happen this year, because Tennessee just gave him a big contract extension with a raise that goes into effect next year. So his salary is about to increase. That hasn't even happened yet. And the buyout number is just so incredible, around $13 million plus what you would have to pay to fire assistant coaches, plus whatever it would take to go get somebody else to come in a year where you're having to cut the budget like they have, and they've already announced the staff cuts that they're putting in place to help save money because of all the financial loss. Now, you can also come back and say, well, what would be the cost of keeping someone? This is, of course, a conversation without knowing what happens over the next 4 weeks, but it's not headed in a good direction. It's not a very good time to be playing Texas A&M, I would say. But Tennessee has put itself in a position where financially it's in a terrible spot. That contract extension has already been criticized, and there's going to be more of that coming from the decision to give Jeremy Pruitt a big raise before he had really proven that he could take Tennessee to a higher level. He was moving in a good direction, it looked like, but it has since reversed course here in the last four games.
Yeah, I mean, that, you just laid out a lot of reality for people who want him gone. It's very, very unlikely. I mean, to me, you got to live with that if you're a Tennessee fan at this point. But what can he do, and how realistic is it that he can do anything the rest of this year to turn this around?
I think it's very unrealistic because when we pointed to last year's turnaround, which was real and it did happen, one, it was led by a number of players who are not on the team anymore, but also the real challenge trying to make it happen this year is the schedule. The Arkansas game was one of your breaks. The Arkansas game and then Vanderbilt later in the season, those are the two opponents you could point to and say, okay, well, those are very beatable opponents for Tennessee, but the games against Texas A&M, Auburn on the road, and Florida look much more difficult than what Tennessee faced in the back half of last season after playing Alabama. It's really not even close with A&M and Florida, I would argue. So considering this Tennessee football team is showing signs of going in the wrong direction, and the schedule, I don't know if it's getting more challenging because of the Alabama and Georgia games behind you, but it's more challenging than Arkansas on Saturday, right? And more challenging than Kentucky. I can't point to anything to say, hey, here's why I believe that everything's going to work out this season for Tennessee. I think fans are holding out some hope that, hey, maybe they hand things over to Harrison Bailey and he takes off. But again, I have nothing to point to say that Harrison Bailey all of a sudden is going to fix anything, and I know he's not going to fix the defensive issues that Tennessee has. So I can't realistically sit here. I feel like I would be lying if I said, you know what, I still believe that things can turn around in a positive way for Tennessee in the next four games.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Josh, obviously Jarrett Garantano goes down in the third quarter. Brian Maurer comes in, and it looked like Tennessee was just terrified to throw the ball with Brian Maurer in the game, and maybe deservedly so. He finishes 0-for-4 on the day passing. What's happened with Brian Maurer, and why do you think there hasn't been any improvement seemingly on that front with him?
Well, his injury and his lack of preparation and practice time in fall camp couldn't have helped, but that shouldn't speak for all of it, I don't think, for why he looks like he's taken a step back from where he was last year. And I think it comes back to the conversation around the development of the quarterback position. Jarrett Garantano has gotten better at times, but he's taken steps back. Brian Maurer having the same conversation. We haven't seen a lot of J.T. Stroud, but what we've seen has not been good. Harrison Bailey's a freshman. I'm not going to pass any judgment there. But he doesn't right now, to me, again, in the small amount of time that we've seen him, he doesn't look like a quarterback that's ready to help lead you. And that is added to the level of frustration among the Tennessee fans who are sitting there thinking, we paid a lot of money to Jim Chaney to come in, and we were told that, hey, year two in the offensive system, with him leading the way, things are going to get a lot better, and they've actually gotten worse. And it can't all just be that Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway are gone. Those are two really important players, but you have other good players, and you have an offensive line that was built up to be really good. And at times it's been good, but at times it's not been good enough. And you know, it all just kind of goes together. But back to the quarterback position, it's been a huge disappointment. And I still wonder, why is Jim Chaney not the quarterback's coach? Chris Winkie is. Do you have communication issues there? But they've not gotten the job done, not even close to it. And we did see the answer, as I think the answer has been given to fans when they ask, why is Jarrett still playing? Why isn't it somebody else? You saw the answer there, but that's not going to make fans feel any better.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, actually, I liked how Garantano was playing before he didn't have big numbers, but I thought he was making good plays, good decisions, running around a little bit before he got hurt. He certainly wasn't the problem.
It was not a disaster with him. It was after he left the game.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned Jim Chaney. I mean, if people want to talk about changes that might happen, I do have to look at him and wonder about him for next year. What would you say at this moment about Jim Chaney, what he's done this year, and where that might be going?
Yeah, as I said, they've invested a lot of money in him, and it has not worked out with the offense. I have a hard time believing he would want to leave. So is that a change that Jeremy Pruitt would want to make? Would he be allowed to make it? What's the cost then to go get somebody else to come in? And if you're in a lame duck situation, can you really get a quality offensive coordinator, a proven guy that's going to come in and try to help save everything? And what kind of coach would you be able to get that would do what they need to do offensively that Jeremy Pruitt would be on board with? That's another question. What exactly does he want them to be offensively? And can they get somebody to fix the quarterback position? So right now it's not working out with Jim Chaney. Maybe that's something, again, that changes here in the next few weeks. It's difficult to believe. But the excitement around bringing Jim Chaney back to Tennessee, getting him away from Georgia, and what that was going to do from the offense has just not paid off. Tennessee's paid a lot to make it happen. It just hasn't brought back the results.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rextro. Josh, great stuff as always, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, you got it. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Josh. I mean, that's kind of the sad reality of it right now for a Tennessee fan, because, look, I'll go on record. The last four games have been enough to show me Jeremy Pruitt is not the guy. He's not the guy to lead this program. He is not the guy that's going to bring Tennessee back. And he is not going to be the coach 3 years from now at Tennessee. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't think he will be. But the problem is, if you want to make a change right now, Tennessee has put themselves in a position where I don't think they can make that happen.
Right.
Like, I think a contract extension that they gave him has totally screwed them from making a change right now at the head coaching position. And you factor in, obviously, COVID and the revenue loss and everything that goes along with that. I mean, they're just in a tough spot right now where Jeremy Pruitt's going to have to be your guy for the next couple of years, I think. And that's a sad place to be if you're a Tennessee fan, because we talked about this last week. What's the conversation going to be like if Sam Pittman in year one comes in here and beats Tennessee and brings Arkansas from the floor of the SEC to a spot where it's already better than the Vols? That's exactly what happened on Saturday, and it's very difficult for me to believe that in year three, if that's happening under Jeremy Pruitt, that it's going to get a whole lot better.
And I have no idea with Chaney, you know, all the discussions, everything, but certainly Chaney to me read as a Philip Fulmer move,
yes.
Right? Get his guy in as the OC. And if that's not working out with Pruitt, and certainly we've already seen him publicly rip one of his calls after a game, that's kind of that's an uncomfortable situation between Pruitt and Fulmer on that front too. I mean, this is a mess from a lot of different angles.
When we come back, it was a loaded weekend of football around both college football and the NFL. We'll take a look around the NFL slate, as well as the couple of big wins in college football that could impact the college football playoff discussion. That's coming up next. But first, 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 is your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters Tournament. Tune in to 102.5 The Game for leaderboard updates this Thursday and Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, ESPN 94.9 will broadcast the Masters live both days. It's all brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belle Mead for all your golfing needs. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rextrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Russian three, drop an eight. Uyangalele steps up, loads and throws. It's caught. It's pitched backwards, up in the air. It's on the ground, still in Clemson's hands. And now it is down. It is over. And the Irish have knocked off number one Clemson.
What a win for Notre Dame on Saturday night, 47-40 over Clemson in double overtime in a phenomenal game by both Notre Dame and Clemson. Very entertaining game on Saturday night. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, we heard it there. Notre Dame gets the win. The students stormed the field after the game.
That was quite a COVID fest.
Yes, it was. Just students pouring onto the field in the middle of a global pandemic after the game. That was fun. And it was interesting to hear Brian Kelly talk about that after the game. He's like, yeah, I told the guys before the game, like, we're going to win, and then the students are going to storm the field, and you need to get off the field as quickly as you possibly can. And that did not happen. They did not get off the field very quickly.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I wonder if there'll be ramifications moving forward.
The university has already come out yesterday with stricter guidelines for the student body.
Yeah. Oh, that'll teach them.
The president, yeah. Well, they've had, I don't know what the percentage is, but Notre Dame's been packed. It's interesting to see Notre Dame have this packed stadium amid, you know, Big Ten country where, like, no one else has anyone in there.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a big win, and that's a bad scenario for, you know, teams like the Bearcats, for example, these other teams trying to get in the playoff, because now Notre Dame's in position here to lose to Clemson in a rematch and get in.
Yeah, and maybe they won't lose to Clemson again. I mean, the offense for Clemson really wasn't the problem on Saturday. I mean, DJ Uiagalelei throws for 439 yards, two touchdowns, 29 of 44.
He's going to be ridiculous.
He's going to be pretty good.
Uiagalelei, by Uiagalele. The way, we were saying Uiagalelei, but it's Uiagalelei.
Wrong emphasis, yeah.
I'm going with my guy Mike Tirico.
It's only taken us 3 weeks to get this.
It's not bad, though. I mean, Tua took me like a year and a half, so this is improvement.
Do you have it now? Like, do you want to go ahead now?
I still Tango Vailoa. See? Tango Vailoa.
Tango Vailoa.
Tango Vailoa. God dang. I mean, seriously. I just say Tua.
You just combined the two names.
Yeah. Tango Vailoa.
You just said Tango Vailoa.
Tango Vailoa.
That's my excuse then. But, you know, Tua is Madonna, you know?
Yeah, just one name.
Yeah,
we're just going to call this guy DJ?
Donovan. What's that?
We're just going to call this guy DJ? I mean, he's going to be that good, probably, where you could refer to him on a one-name basis.
Who would be the D, like right now, if there was someone who was DJ, who would that be?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Maybe
Uiagalelei.
Maybe. That'd be great.
I'll be honest, I had Clemson winning this game, even without Trevor Lawrence in the game. Notre Dame, they showed me something Saturday night.
Ian Book, man, like that last drive to tie it and everything, Ian Book played better than I've ever seen him play. So if he's going to be that guy, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah. Another big game in the SEC on Saturday. Florida just smokes Georgia. Florida wins 44-28. Kyle Trask had like 370 yards passing in the first half in that game on Saturday. Florida, their offense dominates Georgia defensively. A big win for Dan Mullen and the Gators on Saturday. And Georgia, at this point, they're done in the college football playoff race.
I cannot believe that I have thought for a lot of this season that the Vols maybe run the football and you can go up and down the field on that Gators defense. Maybe you got a chance. That is going to be a massacre. That
Kyle Pitts may have 300 yards receiving against Tennessee.
And Kyle Pitts, by the way, he took a like Lester Hayes 1974 hit in that game, which was ugly, and then had to leave. Hopefully he'll be back right away. Those two, that is as dynamic a pass-catching combo as you've got in football right now. And I was stunned. I'm not stunned Florida won the game. We had Peter Burns on saying, what, two touchdown win for Florida, right?
Yeah.
But I'm stunned that they carved up – like Georgia was hopeless against them. That's telling you something, because that's a legit defense.
And like every throw – Kyle Trask had was just perfect. I mean, they were high pointing the ball up. I mean, he's got some. I mean, Kyle Pitts is tall. I mean, they've got some tall receivers there in Florida, but like it was just man to man, one on one matchups, and they were winning almost every single one of them on Saturday. Kyle Trask finishes 30 of 43, 474 yards, four touchdowns, and one pick. And the one pick he threw was a pick six But other than that, he was pretty much perfect in that game.
Well, how much is he changing his draft stock? Where's he going to go?
I don't know. He looks awfully good.
He's pretty good.
Like, where would you rank him? Like, obviously, he's not Lawrence or Fields, but where would you put him right now?
He might be next. He might be next.
Yeah.
And might be high.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, the Titans should draft Pitts. Trade up if you have to. He's that good.
Oh, he's ridiculous. Yeah, that would be interesting to see where he goes to. He's the absolute classic kind of tweener guy, receiver, tight end. He is going to be a problem.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a text that says, for the first 3 minutes of that Florida-Georgia game, I thought Tennessee might have a chance against the Gators. But then Florida did to Georgia what Georgia did to Tennessee, and now I wish we could fake COVID so that Tennessee does not have to play in that game against Florida. It's looking rough right now for Tennessee.
I mean, it's looking rough this week.
It's looking rough. Really every week, Vanderbilt, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll still throw out the Auburn erratic thing. You know, you never know. They could not show up on that day, but it's not looking good.
It is not looking good whatsoever. Let's switch gears, get to the NFL yesterday. Some big games yesterday, and we'll start with the Ravens. A 24-10 win against Phillip Rivers in the Indianapolis Colts. Setting up a massive game on Thursday here in Nashville between the Titans and the Colts. Titans right now at 6-2, sitting in sole possession of first place in the AFC South. Phillip Rivers just couldn't get much going yesterday for the Colts offensively. Lamar Jackson did just enough. He ran the ball fairly well yesterday, and Baltimore returns a fumble for a touchdown by Jonathan Taylor, which if you watched Phillip Rivers attempt to make a tackle on that play, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He tripped over the 30-yard line, laid back on his back, flat, threw his arms up to try to make the tackle, and then just laid there like a starfish after it was done. It was a hilarious display of football by Phillip Rivers there, but a big win for the Ravens, 2-touchdown win for the Ravens in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and there was a big, big play in that game that overturned. It was the one pick Rivers threw, and it was ruled incomplete at first, and I don't think they got it right. That's a big moment in that game. At that point, the Colts are up 10-7. But, you know, Lamar Jackson, 19 for 23, 170. Like you said, he runs for 58, gets the TD. That's just such a good defense, Baltimore. I mean, Jonathan Taylor has 6 carries for 27 yards. Phillip Rivers, another one of those. You know, he throws it 43 times for 227, you know, 5.3 average. It's just that's kind of what they are. But then especially against a defense like that, you know, they're going to be grateful to be facing this defense Thursday.
Yes.
For sure. But that was, I think, another affirmation of what the Ravens can be when they dominated the second half. You know, that's the team that has a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
And then the Bills, a 44-34 win at home against Seattle yesterday, a high-scoring affair there. But just when I start to think the Bills aren't for real, not a very good team, they go and take down what up until that point had been the NFC's top team in Seattle. A pretty good performance yesterday by Josh Allen.
Yeah, he was great. They're all kind of up and down.
Seahawks defense is not very good.
It's bad. I mean, who's good in the NFC? I might be all the way around to God, I mean, you're going to overreact and just think
the Saints looked great last night.
You put Michael Thomas on the field. Boy, Drew Brees was a whole lot better than Tom Brady. But here we go. This is just, you get Antonio Brown because you just got to have Antonio Brown. And look what happens to your football team.
38-3 last night for the Saints. It was over immediately. I mean, it was 31-0 at halftime. They did whatever they wanted to do in the first half. It was a total disaster for the Bucs.
Brady looked awful.
Not only did he look awful last night and the Bucs offense look awful last night, you go back to last Monday night.
Yeah.
Against the Giants, how they barely squeaked that one out. I mean, ever since they signed AB, the news came out that they were bringing him in. They have not looked good at all.
They've gone to the toilet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're too good to stay there, right? I mean, they're going to win games. They're too good. But I think it's just a brutal mistake.
Yeah, and I'm shocked their defense just got lit up last night. Like, people don't realize. I think everybody, when you think about Tampa Bay, obviously you think of Brady and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, all the weapons they have offensively. Tampa's defense is one of the best in the league. Like, their defense is really, really good.
Yep.
And they got torched last night by Drew Brees. Just torched.
They did. And the Saints, on the other side of it, really got after Tom Brady. And that's, I mean, their pass rush, that's one of the reasons that I think you got to look at them. How about Tua, Kyler Murray?
Maybe the most entertaining game of the day yesterday between the Dolphins and Cardinals. Tua gets the win 34-31 against the Cardinals, and Gonzalez, the Cardinals kicker, ended up short on a 49-yard field goal to try to tie that game in the last part of regulation there. How many times do you see an NFL kicker end up short on a 49-yard field goal when, like, it's not a blizzard outside? Like, you're in Arizona.
Yeah.
There's no weather that's affecting you.
That was strange. Justin Herbert almost had just a legendary game winner, but it was bobbled. So the Raiders are 5-3.
Yeah, Dolphins 5-3, Raiders 5-3.
The Chargers.
Oh, man.
They are right there with the Falcons in terms of finding a new way to lose every week.
It's unbelievable. Like, and I thought the Falcons were going to do it again yesterday, by the way. Like, they had a huge lead on the Broncos. They end up winning by a touchdown because the Broncos can't get out of their own way. But I thought it was happening to the Chargers and the Falcons again yesterday.
Falcons are 3-1 with Raheem Morris. And, you know, another really interesting game that should have been a different result was Steelers-Cowboys.
Yeah.
I mean, Garrett Gilbert almost pulled off, but, man, the Steelers needed a lot of breaks to end up winning that game. They're still the only undefeated at
8-0. And another not losing season. I don't think the Steelers have had, like, a losing season in my life. Like, it's been a long time.
Yeah, Roethlisberger, that clinches again. He has never been on a team sub-500.
Yeah, pretty incredible run they've had there in Pittsburgh. When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll break down the big win yesterday against the Bears. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight-up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas-style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21+.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.